A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's the kind of question that sneaks up on you. He used to surf. Rack on the roof, board strapped down, cool, aerodynamic, purpose-built. Now he's trying to bring home a 2-meter piece of industrial shelving. Just a bare roof and a ratchet strap, and the dawning horror of what that shelving unit becomes if he has to brake hard on the highway. He's asking whether you actually need a roof rack, or if a ratchet strap can do the job on its own. What's the difference between ratchet straps and those cam buckle systems you see on proper roof racks? And then the legal side, specifically Israeli traffic law, but with an eye to how it compares elsewhere. How much overhang is legal? When do you need a red flag? And what happens if your cargo becomes a spear in traffic?
The answer to that last one is, you get sued, you get fined, and someone gets hurt. But we'll get there. What I love about this question is that it starts with a very specific image. A guy standing in a hardware store parking lot, holding a ratchet strap, looking at his car roof, and thinking, this is probably fine. And the gap between probably fine and what the physics actually says is enormous.
It's the gap between a surfboard and a shelving unit. One is light, shaped to cut through air, and sits on a rack designed to hold it. The other is a steel rectangle that wants to become a projectile. Daniel's framing this as a downgrade from cool to practical, but it's really a downgrade from safe to whatever the opposite of safe is, when you're doing 70 on the Ayalon Highway with unsecured steel above your head.
And the numbers back this up. Ratchet straps on a bare roof lose 30 to 50% of their initial tension within the first 10 kilometers on rough roads. Vibration-induced ratchet creep. The mechanism literally walks itself loose.
30 to 50%. So you start your drive thinking you've got a rock solid hold, and by the time you hit the first pothole on Route 1, half your clamping force is gone, and the shelving unit is politely introducing itself to your paintwork.
That's before we even talk about braking. Without a roof rack to create a rigid bridge, the strap is just wrapping the load to the roof. Under hard braking, that load can slide forward up to 15 centimeters. That's the difference between the shelving state on the car, and the shelving is now in the windshield of the car in front of you.
We've got three threads to pull here. The mechanical. What's actually happening with tension and vibration? Ratchet versus cam buckle. Why a bare roof fails? The legal. What Israeli traffic regulations say about overhang, flagging, load height, and what happens when you ignore them? And the practical. What Daniel should actually do when he's standing in that parking lot with his shelving unit and his increasingly suspect ratchet strap.
The Israeli law angle is genuinely interesting here, not just because Daniel's in Jerusalem, but because Israel's regulations are unusually specific in ways that other countries aren't. The UK lets you hang stuff 2 meters off the back as long as you flag it. Israel caps rear overhang at 1 meter, period. Different philosophy entirely. The UK trusts visibility, Israel trusts limitation.
Which is a very Israeli approach to regulation, honestly. We don't trust you to make it visible, so we're just going to make it shorter.
There's a logic to it when you look at what actually fails in the field. But before we get to the law, let's get mechanical. What's the difference between a ratchet strap and a cam buckle, and why does it matter? The mechanical story here really comes down to one question. What's actually holding your load in place? With a roof rack, the answer is a rigid bridge. The crossbars sit above the roof. The strap comes over the load and hooks onto the bars, and when you tension it, you're pulling down against something that doesn't flex. The load is clamped between the strap and a solid platform. With a bare roof, you're pulling the strap through the door frames or around the roof itself, and now the car body is part of the tension system, and car bodies flex.
The roof rack isn't just a convenience, it's the thing that makes tension actually work.
Without it, you're compressing the load directly onto the paint. That creates point loads wherever the shelving touches the roof. Dents, scratches, all the stuff Daniel's trying to avoid. But more importantly, the strap isn't clamping downward anymore, it's wrapping around. The difference between clamping and wrapping is the difference between holding something and just hugging it, hopefully.
Hugging it, hopefully, feels like it should be the subtitle of every hardware store parking lot disaster.
The numbers make this concrete. That 30 to 50% tension loss I mentioned, that's from actual testing, and it happens because the ratchet mechanism itself creeps under vibration. Every bump in the road is a tiny release of the pawl. Over 10 kilometers of rough road, those micro releases add up. A cam buckle doesn't have that failure mode because it uses friction, not a pawl in gear. It can't click itself loose.
Which is why we're structuring this into three lanes. The mechanical ratchet versus cam, tension physics, why bare roofs fail. The legal, and Daniel specifically asked about Israel, so we'll go deep on what the traffic regulations actually say, and compare it to the UK and EU, because the differences are revealing. And then the practical. What actually happens when these systems fail in the real world? Who gets sued? And what a 2,500 shekel fine looks like in practice?
On the legal side, Israel's rules are worth paying attention to, even if you don't live here, because they're unusually granular. 1 meter rear overhang maximum, half a meter front, 20 centimeters on each side. Red flag, 50 by 50 centimeters, required if you're past that 1 meter rear mark. Red light at night. Maximum load height, 1 meter above the roof. These aren't suggestions, they're specific, measurable, and enforceable.
Compare that to the UK, where you can hang something 2 meters off the back, as long as you flag it. Same concern, visibility and safety, but a completely different philosophy about how to get there. Israel says limit the overhang, the UK says make the overhang visible. The EU splits the difference, typically 1 meter without a flag, 2 meters with one, but it varies by country.
Which means if Daniel's driving that shelving unit across Europe, the rules change every border. In Israel, at least, he only has to know one set of numbers. The question is whether he knows them. Let's look at the ratchet mechanism itself, because this is where a lot of people get tripped up. A ratchet strap uses a pawl. That's the little spring-loaded tooth that engages with a gear on the spool. Every time you crank the handle, the pawl clicks into the next gear tooth and the strap tightens incrementally. It's brilliant for generating high static tension. You can really crank these things down.
That's the appeal, right? You hear that click, 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 and it feels like you're building something secure. Each click is a promise.
It's also the problem. Because you can keep clicking, there's no built-in limit on how much tension you apply, which means you can over-tighten on a roof rack that can deform the crossbars or crush the load. On a bare roof, it's worse. You're pulling the strap through the door seals, compressing the weather stripping, and bending the roof panel itself. Car roofs are not structural clamping surfaces. They're thin sheet metal designed to keep rain out, not to withstand hundreds of kilograms of compressive force.
The thing that makes ratchet straps feel powerful, that unlimited mechanical advantage, is exactly what makes them dangerous in the wrong context.
Then there's the cam buckle, completely different mechanism. Instead of a pawl and gear, you've got a lever with a textured gripping surface. You thread the strap through, pull it tight by hand, and then close the lever. The cam, that's the off-center pivot, rotates into the strap and pinches it against the base plate. Friction does the holding, not interlocking teeth.
Which means no clicking, no incremental tightening, and no way to over-tighten.
You can't exceed what you can pull by hand. For most roof loads, lumber, shelving, luggage, that's actually ideal. You get consistent, predictable tension that won't crush your load or warp your roof rails. And critically, under vibration, a cam buckle doesn't have a pawl that can walk itself loose. The friction grip might slip slightly under extreme shock, but it doesn't have that ratchet creep failure pattern where every bump is a micro release.
The trade-off is, ratchet gives you more raw clamping power, but introduces two failure pattern, over-tightening damage and vibration, induced creep. Cam buckle gives you less peak tension, but way more consistency, and it won't destroy what you're carrying.
When you put a cam buckle system on a proper roof rack, you get the best of both. The rack provides the rigid bridge, so the tension is actually clamping downward. The cam buckle provides consistent hold without the creep problem. The strap wraps around the crossbar. The load sits on the crossbar, and everything stays put because the system was designed for exactly this.
Which brings us back to Daniel's actual scenario. Bare roof, 2 meter shelving unit, ratchet strap. No crossbars, no rigid bridge, no cam buckle. What's actually happening to that shelving unit on the drive home?
The shelving unit is sitting directly on the roof. The strap goes over it and through the door openings. When he cranks the ratchet, he's pulling the strap tight around the load and the car body simultaneously. But here's the thing. The strap is now wrapping around the roof, not pulling down against a fixed point. The tension is circumferential. It's squeezing the load and the car together like a belt around a package.
The car roof isn't flat. It's curved. So the shelving unit is touching at a few high points, not across its entire length.
Those contact points become pressure points. All the strap tension is concentrated on maybe 3 or 4 small areas where the steel shelf meets the painted roof. Under vibration, those points are grinding into the paint. But more importantly, they're not preventing lateral movement. There's no friction ridge, no crossbar lip, nothing to stop the load from sliding forward under braking except the strap's own grip on a smooth painted surface.
That grip is weakening by the kilometer.
That's the 30 to 50% tension loss kicking in. As the pawl creeps, the strap loosens. As the strap loosens, the friction drops. As the friction drops, the load can shift. And car roofs flex, they're designed to. Every time the chassis twists over uneven road, the roof panel moves slightly, and the strap has to accommodate that movement. A roof rack isolates the load from chassis flex because the crossbars are mounted to fixed points on the roof rails. Without the rack, the load is riding directly on a surface that's constantly micro-adjusting beneath it.
It's not one thing failing. It's a cascade. Vibration loosens the ratchet, which reduces friction, which lets the load slide, and the sliding makes the loosening worse because now the strap is being pulled in a direction it wasn't tensioned for.
Then comes the panic stop. Daniel's on the highway, someone cuts him off, he slams the brakes. The shelving unit, which has been slowly loosening for the last 8 kilometers, now has significant forward momentum. The strap is the only thing holding it, and the strap is at maybe 60% of its original tension. The load slides forward, and in testing, bare roof loads routinely shift 10 to 15 centimeters in a hard braking event. 15 centimeters is enough to put the front edge of that shelving unit past the windshield.
Which is the spear scenario Daniel was worried about. And that's with the strap still technically attached. The load hasn't come off the car, it's just moved enough to become a weapon.
Compare that to the same shelving unit on a pair of $50 crossbars. The crossbars create 2 rigid mounting points above the roof. The strap goes over the load and under the bars. Tension is vertical. It's clamping the shelving to the bars. The bars have a friction surface, often rubber or textured metal, that resists lateral movement. Under hard braking, the load might shift a few millimeters, but it's not going anywhere because the system is working as a system.
The cam buckle on that setup isn't walking itself loose. So the tension at kilometer 10 is basically the same as the tension at kilometer 0.
That's the key finding from the test data. Cam buckle systems on roof racks hold tension consistently because the friction surface is larger and the mechanism doesn't have that click-loose failure pattern. The ratchet on a bare roof is fighting physics on 3 fronts, chassis flex, vibration creep, and point load pressure, and it loses on all 3.
Daniel's question. Can a ratchet strap work if you don't have a rack? The mechanical answer is, it can work just well enough to get you overconfident, and then it fails progressively in ways you won't notice until you're already in trouble. We've established the mechanical cascade. Vibration loosens the ratchet, friction drops, load slides, and suddenly, your shelving unit is auditioning for a role as a traffic hazard. Now let's talk about what happens when the police or a lawyer gets involved.
This is where Israel gets specific in ways that most people don't realize. I pulled the actual regulations. Israeli traffic law says your load cannot protrude more than 1 meter beyond the rear of the vehicle, 0.5 meter beyond the front, and 20 centimeters beyond each side. Those are hard limits, not guidelines, not suggestions. If you exceed them, you're illegal before you've even turned the key.
20 centimeters on the sides is surprisingly tight. That's less than the width of a hand. You overhang by more than that, and technically you're in violation.
That side limit catches people all the time. You strap a mattress to the roof. It hangs over the doors by 30 centimeters on each side, and you think, well, it's soft. What's the problem? The problem is you've just exceeded the legal overhang by 50%. A police officer can pull you over for that alone.
For Daniel's 2-meter shelving unit on a typical sedan, say 4.5 meters long, if he centers it properly, the overhang is about 0.5 meter front and rear. That's within the limit. He doesn't even need a flag at that point. The assumption that the load has to be shorter than the car is just wrong.
That's one of the biggest misconceptions out there. People think the load must be shorter than the car. The law doesn't care about total load length. It cares about how far the load sticks out from the vehicle's extremities. A 2-meter shelf on a 4.5-meter car, centered, is perfectly legal with no flag required. A 3-meter piece of lumber on the same car, now you've got roughly 1.25 meters overhang at the rear, and you need a red flag.
Which brings us to the flag. Daniel specifically worried about someone rear-ending the shelving, or the shelving becoming a spear. The law addresses this directly. If your rear overhang exceeds 1 meter, you must attach a red flag, 50 centimeters by 50 centimeters, so roughly 20 inches square, to the end of the load.
At night, it has to be a red light, not a reflector, not a piece of red cloth you found in the trunk, an actual light. The logic is obvious. A shelving unit sticking 1.5 meters off the back of a car at night is essentially invisible to the driver behind you until they're close enough to read your license plate. By then, it's too late.
The spear scenario Daniel described is not theoretical. If you brake hard and the car behind you doesn't see the overhang, that shelving unit goes through their windshield at whatever speed they're traveling. The flag is the difference between "I see a car," and "I see a car with something dangerous sticking off the back."
Failure to flag isn't a minor infraction. The fine is 750 shekels, about $200 US. That's for the flag alone. If the unsecured or improperly flagged load actually causes an accident, we're in a completely different legal universe.
This is where the liability chain gets serious.
Section 62 of the Israeli Traffic Ordinance covers negligent driving causing bodily harm. Courts have applied it to improperly secured loads. If your shelving unit comes off the roof and causes an accident, you're not just looking at a fine, you're looking at criminal liability. And here's the detail most people miss. Your insurance may be voided if the load was illegal at the time of the accident.
You cause a multi-car pileup? Your insurance company looks at the police report, sees the load was unsecured or over the legal limit, and says, "We're not paying." Now you're personally on the hook for damages, medical bills, and legal fees. That 2,500 shekel fine suddenly looks like the cheap part.
There was a case on Highway 1 in 2023. A driver had an unsecured ladder on the roof. Ladder slid off, caused a multi-car pileup. The driver was fined 2,500 shekels and sued for civil damages. The court found that the ladder was not properly strapped and had no flag despite overhanging the rear of the vehicle. That driver's life got very expensive very quickly.
A ladder is light, aerodynamic, and people strap them to roofs all the time without thinking twice. That's what makes this case instructive. It wasn't some bizarre load. It was the most ordinary cargo imaginable, secured the way millions of people secure things every day, and it still failed catastrophically.
That connects directly back to the mechanical failure we talked about. The ladder almost certainly seemed fine when the driver pulled out of the parking lot, tightened it down, gave it a shake, felt solid. But vibration creep over distance, no rigid bridge, no safety strap. And somewhere on Highway 1, the tension dropped below the threshold needed to hold it during a maneuver or a gust of wind from a passing truck.
The law isn't just bureaucracy. It's designed around exactly these failure pattern. The 1 meter rear limit, the flag requirement, the red light at night. Each one addresses a specific way that loads actually fail in the real world.
The comparison to other countries reveals the philosophy behind it. The UK allows up to 2 meters of rear overhang with a flag. That's double Israel's limit. The UK approach says, make it visible and drivers will adapt. Israel's approach says, limit how far it can stick out and then also make it visible. Belt and suspenders.
Which, given Israeli driving culture, might be the prudent call. We're not exactly known for generous following distances.
The EU is a patchwork. Most countries allow 1 meter rear overhang without a flag, 2 meters with one, but Germany, France, Spain, Italy all have slightly different thresholds and flag dimensions. If you're driving across Europe with a load on the roof, you technically need to know the rules for every country you pass through.
Whereas in Israel, you only need to know one set of numbers. The question is whether anyone actually does.
Here's the second-order danger that almost nobody thinks about. Daniel's worried about length, but the real risk with roof loads isn't just horizontal, it's vertical. Israeli law caps roof load height at 1 meter above the roof. Stack higher than that, and you're shifting the vehicle's center of gravity upward, sometimes dramatically.
Which increases rollover risk in any emergency maneuver. Most people load the roof and think about whether it'll stay on. They don't think about whether it'll flip the car.
A 2 meter steel shelving unit isn't light. Those things can weigh 25 to 30 kilos. Add a second one and you're at 50 or 60 kilos before the rack itself. Most passenger cars have a roof load limit of 50 to 75 kilograms total, including the rack. You can exceed that without realizing it, and now you've got an overweight, top-heavy vehicle with an unsecured load. That's not one violation. That's three stacked on top of each other.
If something goes wrong, the investigation will find all three. The insurance company will find all three. The court will find all three. The law doesn't care that you didn't know the load limit of your own car. Ignorance isn't a defense. It's just an expensive way to learn.
What do you actually do with all this? You're standing in the IKEA loading zone with a 2 meter steel shelf and a car that doesn't have a roof rack. What's the checklist?
Step 1. Buy the crossbars. Even the cheap ones. $50 gets you a pair of universal crossbars that clamp onto your roof rails. And that $50 is the difference between a system that works and a strap that's hugging your cargo, hopefully for 10 kilometers, before giving up entirely.
That's not hyperbole. It's the 30 to 50% tension loss we talked about. Crossbars eliminate that failure pattern by giving the strap something rigid to pull against.
Step 2. Measure your overhang before you leave the parking lot. For a 2-meter shelf on a 4.5-meter sedan, center it so the overhang is roughly 0.5 meter front and rear. That's legal in Israel without a flag. If your load is longer than that, say you're bringing home lumber or pipe, buy the red flag. 50 by 50 centimeters. Attach it securely to the rear end. At night, it needs to be a red light.
Step 3 is the one almost nobody checks. Look up your car's roof load limit. It's in the manual. Most passenger cars top out at 50 to 75 kilograms, and that includes the weight of the rack itself. A 2-meter steel shelf can weigh 25 to 30 kilos. Two of them plus crossbars, and you're at 65 or 70, right at the limit. Exceed it, and you're driving an overweight, top-heavy vehicle with voided insurance if something goes wrong.
Step 4 is the cheapest insurance policy you'll ever buy. Run a secondary safety strap, a separate line from the load to a fixed point on the car. If the primary strap fails, the safety line catches the load before it becomes airborne. Israeli driving schools recommend this, and it costs you maybe 10 shekels worth of strap. Compare that to a 2,500 shekel fine and a lawsuit.
It's the kind of thing that feels excessive until it's the only thing between you and a court date.
Here's the thing that sits with me after all this. Cars are getting more aerodynamic. Roof rails are disappearing into flush-mounted tracks or vanishing entirely in favor of glass canopies and solar roofs. Aftermarket crossbars don't fit half the new models without adapters. And yet, we're in this post-pandemic DIY boom where everyone's hauling their own plywood and shelving and mattresses.
The two trends are on a collision course. Fewer cars with easy rack mounting, more people trying to transport awkward loads. The gap gets filled by ratchet straps on bare roofs, which we've just established is a mechanical failure waiting to happen. I'd expect the accident numbers to tick up, and I'd expect regulation to follow.
The other wild card is autonomous driving. We're maybe a decade out from systems that can detect an unsecured load. Cameras that spot a shifting strap, LiDAR that flags an overhang without a red marker, and the car refuses to move until you fix it. But that's a decade away, and Daniel's shelving unit is in the parking lot right now.
Until then, the hard way remains the most popular teacher. A 2,500 shekel fine, a voided insurance claim, a court date. The physics doesn't care that you didn't know. The law doesn't care that it seemed fine when you pulled out of the lot.
Next time you strap something to your roof, ask yourself 3 questions. Is this legal? Have I measured the overhang? Do I need a flag or a light? Is this safe? Do I have a rigid bridge under the load? Is my strap mechanism right for the job? Have I checked the weight limit? Is this smart? Have I run a safety line? Have I checked the load after 10 kilometers?
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the 1860s, Polynesian wayfinders in the Solomon Islands identified navigational stars by the chemical composition of the seawater that pooled in the hollow of their canoe decks, using subtle differences in phosphorescent glow to confirm their latitude.
Phosphorescent canoe water.
I have so many questions about the methodology.
One last thing before we go. If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps more than you'd think. This has been My Weird Prompts, with thanks as always to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.